I made a promise, said my eyes would stay shut through something called the scope of all this rebuilding. That is the hotel year. Yes, I found lyrics about rebuilding. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. The Toronto Blue Jays completed their trade deadline yesterday, having made 8 trades over the last week, sending out their 6 pending free agents, as well as 2 players with term in Nate Pearson and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. In return, they get back 13 prospects who range from fringe top 100 to arguably, and according to Baseball America, literally the worst prospect traded on deadline day. Wide range of outcomes there. Probably have the system bumping from, 25, 26 range to 19, 20, 21 range. But once these things have settled a little bit and people like Fangraphs and Baseball America and ESPN have a chance to sit with it and re-rank it, talk to some of those people. Yesterday during our 4-hour deadline special, Jeff Ponce told me afterward that Baseball America will update their Jays top 30 early next week. So we'll see where these guys slot in internally. Eric Longenhagen of Fangraphs, who's going to update the overall farm rankings of Fangraphs as things settle here, he's going to join us tomorrow. Kylie McDaniel of ESPN, who in addition to ranking farm systems and things like that, was very fascinated by the Blue Jays heading into the deadline. He'll join us tomorrow as well. We also got a loaded show today. We do have to focus on the actual baseball being played because the Jays play at 12:35 today. It'll be Grayson Rodriguez against a TBA that we assume will be Paolo Espino. Chris LaRue will join us around 11 o'clock. He's on the radio call for this one with Eric Smith. We'll talk about that game a little bit. Ryan Dempster is going to join us in the second hour as well. Want to get a look between Chris and Ryan at what the last couple days have been like in a clubhouse, what these next couple days are like. The Jays probably have a little bit of weight off their shoulders, knowing who's going to be dealt, who's still around, and a lot of opportunity for guys to play for the rest of the way here. Mike Petriello will also join us around 10:30, break down the Jays trade deadline, look at some winners and losers around all of Major League Baseball, because it got real busy by the final buzzer there. My take on the Blue Jays deadline, before we just move forward here and see what Jonah Bierenbaum thinks about it, is basically this. It is a failure that the Blue Jays were selling at the deadline this year. Having said that, they did a pretty good job turning expirings and superfluous guys, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who's probably more than superfluous, but taking those extra pieces, those expiring pieces, and making chicken salad out of the situation. Now the page turns to a whole lot of work to be done for 2025 to get this team back to where it needs to be, which is competing for a playoff spot and competing to play meaningful and long playoff baseball. Jonah Bierenbaum of The Score joins us now. How we feeling, buddy?
Feeling good, man. And I got to say, I'm honored to be on a show that features so many fellow Canadian baseball legends in Chris LaRue and Ryan Dempster. It's an honor to be among those fellas.
I believe you have pitched more recently than either of them, though. And it's certainly not pro ball or semi-pro ball or even a tiny bit of a pro ball, but you're still playing. You're still pitching.
Yeah, I was going to say it's barely even ball, but the arm hasn't fallen off yet. We'll see what happens on Saturday, but for now, we're going strong.
Well, the Jays do have 4 open spots on their 40-man roster and could open up a 5th by moving Alek Manoah to the 60-day IL. There's going to be a lot of relief pitcher churn these next couple of months here, Jonah. Keep that thing iced. All right, deadline thoughts. So the 6 pending free agents are out. Danny Jansen, Kevin Kiermaier, Trevor Richards, Jimmy Garcia, Yusei Kikuchi, and the 6th one that I'm drawing a blank on, Justin Turner.
Trevor Richards?
Justin Turner. Yeah, and then Nate Pearson and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa also go out. They bring back 13 prospects, and probably the most notable, the Jays don't have to play against Ryan Yarbrough anymore. the sweet relief of that one. In seriousness, what did you make of the overall deadline movement there?
Yeah, I think that our assessments line up. I think it was a highly successful deadline. Dare I say they crushed it? As you mentioned, they turned every single one of their expiring contracts into prospect capital. I think they made a significant step towards optimizing their 2025 roster by trading away Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And if the publicly available numbers are to be trusted, they may well have gotten themselves under the CBT threshold, which means their penalty level, should they exceed it next season, will reset. That's a real good few days. And even though they weren't trading away superstars, they did a really good job of fortifying a farm system that was among the league's worst coming into the deadline. Obviously, as you mentioned, the prospect rankings around the league are in flux right now. But having said that, of the 13 minor leaguers they acquired, 7 are now among the Blue Jays' top 30 on MLB Pipeline. Two are in the top 10. One is in the top 3. Now, according to Fangraphs, the Blue Jays have the 22nd best system in all of baseball. A week ago, they were 25th. Moving up 3 spots when you're trading away non-impact players and multiple guys like Yusei Kikuchi and Danny Jansen, for instance, who have really struggled over the last little while, is, I think, a significant accomplishment. And additionally, they were successful in getting a significant number of players who are close or close-ish to the big leagues and could conceivably contribute to a team that the Blue Jays hope will be competitive in 2025. Jake Bloss, Joey Loperfido, Jonathan Clase, they've all played in the big leagues. And at the very least, they could give the Blue Jays some more options for big league depth immediately, maybe even more than depth, if Bloss can be the pitcher he's been in the upper levels of the minors, or if Loperfido can be the hitter he's been in AAA. Meanwhile, Will Wagner, he's knocking on the door in AAA. Charles McAdoo, RJ Schreck, Yohandrick Pinango, Edinson Polino, Josh Rivera, they're all in AA. That's not an insignificant infusion in the upper levels of the minors. And having more assets in the upper levels of the minors not only means improved depth for the big league team, but more assets to potentially trade away down the road. So overall, between replenishing the farm system, the other housekeeping they did to optimize the 2025 roster, I really think the Blue Jays did a good job here. And while it sucks to concede on a season in which they were supposed to be competitive, there's no question that they're better stock moving forward and better positioned, generally speaking, for 2025.
And I think that's a good wrap on it. I mean, all of that was great. But yes, this idea that, yeah, hey, it's uncomfortable. It's not what any of us wanted. We're going to have to hold two thoughts here at the same time. We're going to have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. Good deadline. Did what you need to accomplish. Doesn't change the fact that it's very bad that you were here in the first place. Those things can coexist. And you know, honestly, one of the most common questions in the text line and on Twitter and stuff has been like, you know, what does this do for the job security of the front office, et cetera? You know, I don't think it changes your opinion on things here. They did a good job. It is a data point. But what has happened at the major league level over 8 or 9 years? Much larger data point. You know, it certainly seems like based on how this was handled, there won't be, you know, it's going to be the same group putting together the 2025 team. So we'll see if they've learned from the mistakes of the last couple off seasons. But no, us saying the deadline was good doesn't change your big picture thoughts too much, probably. You mentioned a couple things in there. So I've explained this on the show, but for anyone wondering, why is the competitive balance tax, the luxury tax, or CBT as it's called, why does that matter? Well, first of all, if you duck below it, and Ross Atkins told us on a Zoom last night that they're on the, quote, razor's edge of it. Obviously a huge 90s WWE fan for dropping the razor's edge instead of the outsider's edge there. Anyway.
It a is man after your own heart.
It is important. He's not. He has failed if that's the case. There are two key reasons why you care about the CBT that don't involve the money and Rogers pocketbooks or whatever else people say to it. One is that if you go out this offseason and you want to sign marquee free agents who were given the qualifying offer by other teams, the draft and international slot money penalties for doing so are decreased if you are not a CBT team. The other part of it is next year when you spend into the tax, which we expect the Blue Jays to do if they're going to compete, you're only paying a 20% tax rate instead of a 50% tax rate. So let's say they have $250 million to spend. That goes further if less of that money is going into the tax. You could spend more on players with the same budget. So those are important considerations there. Now, you mentioned a lot of the prospects there. I guess if there were a question mark about the haul that they've got back, and it is notable that the unquestioned top prospect they got back is a starting pitching prospect who most people, even the people who are a little more negative on him, are like, yeah, he could be a fourth, fifth starter. Like that seems to be, you know, Chris Black has a great thread on Jake Bloss out today where it's like the absolute floor on this guy is like Trent Thornton, a multi-year major leaguer with a league average ERA who's kind of a long man out of the bullpen. We can aim way higher than that. He's only been in pro ball a year, 13 months right now since his draft. So that's the top piece they got back. But other than that, they skewed heavily on the position player side. Gilberto Batista is in A ball. He's kind of a lottery ticket guy, not ranked in systems and things like that. He's the only other pitcher that they picked up other than Ryan Yarbrough, who's in his 30s and will just slide into the bullpen. What did you make of that element of it? And how much of that do you think is, you know, related to what is available on the market versus that, you know, what you expressed, where the Jays did prioritize? It seemed at least to prioritize guys with a little bit of proximity to the major leagues there. Maybe those pitchers just weren't available, but you know, 11 position players to two pitchers stands out given where the organization's strengths and weaknesses lie.
Yeah, I think it's a function of what was available, and it was balancing both proximity to the big leagues and upside. And when they were obviously in those discussions, the players who sort of fit both of those criteria overwhelmingly, I suspect, were position players. I don't think it was a conscious thing that they went in looking for, you know, an overwhelming representation of position players, especially given, you know, at the big league level and in the upper levels of the minor leagues, there is a dearth of starting pitching talent. So, you know, I think they would have loved to have acquired more starting pitchers who could have been factors for the 2025 Blue Jays and who could have provided more depth in the upper levels of the minor leagues. I just don't think that those guys were available. So they went for, you know, the guys who were close to the big leagues, who had the most upside. And, you know, to get, you know, a prospect like Joey Loperfido, who has a 50 future value, you know, alongside Jake Bloss, like that's a huge coup, especially considering, you know, once again, as I mentioned earlier, they weren't trading away superstars, right? They were trading away, you know, complementary pieces. So I think they did really well. Would it have been nice to get more starting pitching? Absolutely. But I think that ultimately they were targeting, you know, the best players available and also balancing that with trying to target guys who are at least close-ish to the big leagues.
Yeah. So that is, I mean, that's well said. And, you know, this is one of those things, again, some of the, and maybe I'm over-indexing to some of the response you get on Twitter or talking to other people. You know, I know some people don't care about prospects, right? Like Loperfido matters and Bloss matters because we're going to see them the rest of the season. Probably we might see Will Wagner the rest of the season. Some of these guys are going to compete for bench and complementary roles for 2025. But it's important to note that turning expiring contracts, guys who could potentially leave for free in the offseason anyway, into prospect capital is not just about, oh, the farm system ranking, oh, it's fun to track prospects. This is about creating a better base to continue to build from. So again, the CBT factor that lets you spend more freely in free agency in 2025, it gives you more trade capital if you do need to turn around and make deals. Not to say you're necessarily going to include Will Wagner and Cutter Coffey specifically, but maybe you're more comfortable pulling from your position player pool of prospects to make a future deal. So even if you're the type that doesn't really care that much about prospects, farm rankings, the CBT, this is about creating a better foundation to build for 2025 from. Now the pressure becomes, how the hell are you going to get this team from a team that's going to finish this year 10, 15 games under 500 to a team that can get back to the high 80s win mark? So let's turn the conversation to that, Jonah. What does 2025 look like to you right now? I went through the updated kind of number here is, if I can find it in my notes, having a rough day finding stuff in my notes. The Jays have about $165 million committed, and that's so $123 million guaranteed for Gausman, Bassett, Berríos in the rotation, Green in the bullpen, wherever Yariel Rodriguez lands, and then Springer and Bichette. So that's $125 million there. I penciled in $25 million for Vlad in arbitration, the final arb year as a Super 2 guy. He's going to get paid. And then like rough estimates for Yenesis Cabrera, Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk. That gets us to about $165. That's before factoring in Eric Swanson, who seems like a non-tender candidate, Jordan Romano, who we'll see. He could be a non-tender candidate or a multi-year deal candidate as he would, because he's going to make like $10 million, but he'll be coming off injury. We'll see with that, with those things. So those guys are question marks, but we're at about $165 million there for three starters, one reliever, Yariel Rodriguez, Vlad, Bo, Springer, Kirk, and Varsho. How you feeling about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what that roster doesn't look like, and that's a playoff caliber roster right now. Right. And to be clear, while the overall health of the organization improved significantly over the last few days, as did their major league outfield depth, you know, their 2025 roster is, to put it generally, a work in progress. They have a lot of holes that need filling. They need more starting pitching. They need a corner outfielder with power. They need at least two leverage bullpen arms. They need a backup catcher. They need a DH. I think they need a third baseman as well. You know, depending on, you know, what they want to do with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. If they want to move him to third full time, maybe that changes the calculus, but I wouldn't be penciling Ernie Clement in for an everyday role if you're trying to make the playoffs. So as much as they accomplished over the last few days, they have a ton of work ahead of them for 2025. They're going to have to be active in free agency and on the trade market this winter, as Ross Atkins acknowledged yesterday. But because of what they pulled off over the last couple of days, they're in a much better position to do both those things. But there's going to be a lot of heavy lifting to be done. Frankly, they may may have to make a series of financial commitments that they're not terribly comfortable with in order to get to where they need to be for 2025. But look, they have obviously opted for the strategy of trying to be competitive next year. And that means, you know, they got to do what needs to be done, because it really does feel, at this point at least, with no extensions in place for core pieces, it feels like a one-year window. So they got to do what they got to do, and they have to do a lot.
Yeah, and look, these are not easy things to shop for, right? Like, it's easy to look and say, well, okay, based on Blake's numbers, you know, maybe they have $70 million to spend, right? And this is a very rough approximation. It might be something like 60. It could be something like 80. Let's say $70 million for the case of, you know, just projecting forward where they were expected to spend this year, inflation, et cetera. $70 million. And you've got, okay, we technically have five starters, but one of those is Yariel, one of those is Jake Bloss. You know, you're going to need to come into camp with more than that. And if it bumps Yariel to the bullpen or Jake Bloss to AAA or whatever, that's a good problem to have at that point. But you need to address starting pitching depth. You might only have Chad Green and Yenesis Cabrera in your bullpen on day one. I think probably they'll figure
something. Jordan Romano will be back.
I think they'll figure something out, but like, if you're being totally cold and calculating about this, like if him coming off of injury when he was pitching poorly before the injury is set to get $10 million in arbitration, like they would probably non-tender and then work out a new multi-year kind of deal. Like a not as aggressive as Chad Green, but I can't imagine they just go through the arb process coming off of injury. But your bullpen has, okay, then three, maybe four guys if Bowden Francis moves into the bullpen and looks good the rest of the way here. So you need lots of relievers, and the 40-man churn we're going to do the rest of the way here is not enough. And then even if you cheaped out on starting pitching depth and relievers, because relievers are generally inexpensive, you say, okay, well, then there's $50 million for the position player side, but you need a third baseman, a left fielder, and you said backup catcher. I'd argue probably someone, given what we've seen with Alejandro Kirk, you know, when he is asked to play five times a week, like you probably need someone who's penciled in for at least 60 of those 162 games. And that's not, you know, the catchers don't make a lot of money, but suddenly, you know, you're already pulling from Peter to pay Paul with one of these positional needs, right? Starting pitching depth, a whole overhaul bullpen or impact bats. So it's going to be tough work to do, I think. Is there, like, would you say the A1 priority, though, is you need a middle of the order power bat at third base or left field?
100%. Yeah, I mean, we've seen what has happened to this offense over the last couple seasons as they've, you know, lost key pieces from, you know, maybe the apex of the competitive window and of the offense in 2021, amid diminishing returns from, you know, key guys like George Springer, amid uncertainty over what Alejandro Kirk is, over what Dalton Varsho is. I think that has to be priority number one, is injecting not only an impact bat, but someone that you can reliably project for consistency, right? I think that's a huge issue with this Blue Jays team, is there's just been so much volatility and inconsistency year over year. You really don't know what you're going to get from so many key pieces. So, you know, investing in a corner outfielder or a third baseman who you know is going to give you, you know, an 800 OPS and you know, 20 plus homers, that has to be at the top of Ross Atkins' to-do list.
Alex Bregman, bounce back season, come on down. He is not.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's not hit particularly well this year, but that's going to be the type of guy you're looking at probably. And then in addition to free agency, of course, there is always the possibility to trade for these guys. That's a little tougher, but that's, again, why you're stocking prospect capital here. With respect to those prospects, Jonah, when we look at who could potentially see the major leagues this year, and this includes guys who are already up on the team, your Clements, Leo Jimenez, you know, Horwitz, I'd probably put a tier above those. He's shown enough at the plate, but like Davis Schneider is now back down in the, hey, you're auditioning for a 2025 role. You could put Loperfido and Wagner in there. Is there a chance there's nothing one of those guys could do over the last 2 months here in terms of a heater that would change the accounting here, right? Like Loperfido is showing you he can be a fourth outfield / split time guy maybe, right? And Wagner would be competing for a bench role with Clement and Leo and Schneider and things like that. 2 months of a prospect is not going to be enough to change how we look at 2025 and this team's big picture needs, right?
No, earmarking any of these guys who don't project to be big league regulars for opening day jobs in 2025 is a recipe for success. I don't think that's something that a team with World Series aspirations or at least playoff aspirations would do, especially considering that at this rate, you're probably thinking that Spencer Horwitz is going to be an everyday player for you next year. So there's already some degree of risk that you're taking by putting a relatively inexperienced guy and not a particularly highly touted prospect into your everyday calculation moving forward. So, you know, it is important to assess these guys, but it is also important at the same time not to get, a little bit too excited over what we could see over a 2-month sample here, especially when the pressure's off. You know, the Blue Jays aren't trying to compete for a playoff spot anymore. So it's not exactly like it's, a high pressure environment for these guys. Obviously, evaluation and big league reps and the data, like that's all relevant and should factor into, evaluation to a certain degree, but it's important not to get too carried away over what we see for the next little while, because this is a team, like I said, that is essentially moving forward with maybe just a 1-year window and going into the season with a glut of inexperienced and potentially fringy big leaguers carved out with major roles. That's problematic.
And how they handled Davis Schneider heading into this year is probably a good example, right? He had an OPS of 1,000 last year over 35 games in the second half of the season. Could have made an argument for him to get more playing time last year because he was hot, but he comes into camp this year and he had to compete for a spot. He had the upper leg on a spot, but he wasn't playing every day to start the year. And then once he does play every day, and again, Davis Schneider's a guy I like and I am fond of and things like that. But the challenge is when you're a 24, 25 year old in your first pro season is you're going to have ups and downs. And now he's OPSing 694 and he's back down into a bit more of a part-time role here. This isn't about Davis so much as he's the kind of guy that you're looking for these next 2 months here. Hey, 1,000 OPS over the last little bit of the season. And even then they had to be like, okay, well, he's still competing for a spot. We're not handing him an everyday role. Now, Lou Profeto has more prospect capital and more, minor league pedigree and things like that. But yeah, I think it's a helpful example to keep in mind. Before I let you go here, Jonah, Vlad is on an absolute heater. And I know that, we had talked about it and everyone around baseball talked about, well, what would a Vlad trade have looked like? Ross Atkins said last night that Vlad and Bo, they never really engaged with it. It was never their intention. They weren't close on anything. They're a part of the core. If Vlad is hitting like this, Vlad, by the way, who reached base 3 times last night and is so hot lately that it didn't move his OPS plus. He got on base 3 times and it didn't move his stat line. He's up to a 155 WRC plus on the season now, which is second only to his MVP year and is actually stronger than the second half of his MVP candidate year. Sorry, Shohei. If this is the version of Vlad that the team has moving forward, I mean, you mentioned it. There's an urgency for 2025 with this competitive window. But how much more confident are you that 2025 is executable if Vlad is a 900, 910 OPS guy versus 800-ish OPS Vlad we saw for the last 2 seasons and the start of this year?
Yeah, eminently more confident, certainly. When Vlad looks like this, it makes the prospect of contending in 2025 seem so much more plausible. It probably makes an extension considerably more difficult, but it makes the possibility of competing next year seem real, which frankly, it hasn't for a lot of this season. But look, that's the plan they're committing to, competing in 2025. That's what their deadline approach very much evinced, and Vlad hitting like he is right now adds credibility to that approach because for the moment, he looks like the kind of hitter who can be the bedrock of a top-level offense. Dude, since mid-June, he's hit .376 with an OPS of almost 1,200. And in the process, he's bumped his season OPS over 900. To move your season OPS up nearly 150 points at this point in the season is remarkable. He's got 14 bombs over his last 34 games. He hasn't had a 34-game run with that many homers since 2021. But critically, during that span, he also has 13 doubles. Never before, not even in 2021, did he have a 34-game span with that many extra base hits. This is as close to the hottest hitter he's ever been, if not the hottest hitter he's ever been. And it's stretches like this that make him look like a franchise player and make him evidently impossible to trade and make the prospect of a year-over-year turnaround from a sub-500 team into a playoff team seem possible.
Jonah, last year, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s on-base plus slugging, or his OPS, was .788. The year before that, it was .818. Since June 21st, his slugging alone is .808. Forget, leave OBP out of OPS, and he has slugged at a level higher than his OPS from the last 2 years over the last 6 weeks here. Remarkable.
That's like, that's Barry Bonds stuff. Like when Barry Bonds was at the height of his power, he was slugging between 700 and 800 every year. And that's what Vlad has looked like over the last, 6 weeks or so. It makes sense that you can't trade that guy because he looks like one of the best hitters in the game. And when you have a player like that, it seems like anything's possible, right? I get why they would cling to him like grim death, because he's on another planet right now.
Yeah, 8 homers since the All-Star break, which ended like a minute ago. It's a lot of fun. Jonah, always a lot of fun talking to you. Thanks for taking the time out today, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Love the glasses.
Thanks, man. Jonah Bierenbaum of The Score at Bierenball on Twitter. Yeah, it's a glasses day. I'm quite tired after the marathon day yesterday. Canada in here at like 6:30 watching Canada basketball. By the way, off to the side right now, Damian Priest is on MLB Network, WWE champion Damian Priest. Very, very jealous he's not on our show talking about the Yankees deadline here. Jonah Bierenbaum will have to do, not a WWE champion though. Also, we'll have to do Mike Petriello coming up after the break. We're going to talk to Chris LaRue and Ryan Dempster in the second hour of the show. We're also going to answer some of your texts that are left over from yesterday. Answer some of the questions that, we've been getting since the deadline wrapped here. You can send those to 590-590. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. But yeah, the headline item here and something to keep in mind, because, people are snarky or people want to get their opinion off or don't listen all that carefully. The Blue Jays having a good deadline is separate from this being a good season. I'm going to repeat it a bunch over the course of this week because it's important context and people, I don't want anyone to miss it. The fact that they were selling, absolute disappointment, a failure of what this season was supposed to be, a failure of what this window was supposed to be. Middle ground, yeah, they did well with the trade deadline. They did well to restock the farm system, get some guys who could potentially contribute next year, get some guys as a prospect base that might allow you to make better trades in the offseason to fortify this team. You potentially got below the competitive balance tax at the deadline, which helps you spend your money goes further in 2025 without risk of higher draft pick compensation and tax overages and things like that. Nobody cares about the money necessarily, but it helps it go further. So even if you don't care that much about prospects and the tax line and things like that, the ability to spend for 2025 has been improved through this deadline as well. Now the pressure becomes, how do you make this team much better in 2025? Because you're going to have to improve about 20 games in the standings. We'll see where they finish this year, but they're going to have to make up about 20, 25 games here probably off of what they did this year. And that won't just be by internal improvement and a couple of prospects reaching the major leagues. There's a lot of work to be done. So those are the kind of three things. Failure you got here, good job managing it. Now you better nail down the adding for 2025. Let's take a break. Let's see what Mike Petriello of MLB.com thinks of the Jays trade deadline, as well as the trade deadline around Major League Baseball that got very, very busy at the buzzer. The Dodgers adding Jack Flaherty in addition to Kevin Kiermaier. The Padres rehauling their bullpen on the fly. The AL East battling with a number of guys. And Jazz Chisholm can't stop hitting home runs for the Yankees. We'll see what Mike Petriello thinks of all of it as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Don't know why I said I'm pretty confident that I'm Blake Murphy. Pretty confident our next guest is Mike Petriello of MLB.com. He joins us now to a little Jeff Rosenstock playing us in. How we doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. And once again, I'm so jealous I can't hear the intros. What song was it?
What song did I go with today? I want to be wrong. I had to...
good choice.
Yeah, I had to pick a good opening riff and something with appropriate lyrics in the event that there was a delay and it played too long or something like that. That's always a little tough. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm great. I'm excited that yesterday is over because it was super fun and wildly exhausting. And now you can actually let the dust settle and see what even happened and catch up on moves I missed, which I feel like I did.
Dude, everyone did something. I think all 30 teams made a move over the course of the week, and I think 27 made one on the actual deadline day. There were 89 prospects traded. I guess 88 if you consider Joey Loperfido a major leaguer, since he's going to join the Blue Jays major league roster. A lot going on there, a lot to digest. Let's start with the Jays, if we can. The return for Yusei Kikuchi looked pretty good in the moment. And then when we saw the return for Jack Flaherty, who you could argue is a better rental pitcher than Yusei Kikuchi, you know, the stuff isn't quite as good, but the results so far this season are. And yeah, it got a ... wow from you on Twitter. What do you make in the light of having seen the way the rest of the market played out, revisiting that Yusei Kikuchi return?
I mean, I think you're a little bit too kind. Like, I'm not even sure I could make the argument that Kikuchi is a better pitcher for the next 10 starts than Flaherty is, with the huge caveat that there was this report that said the Yankees apparently backed out of a deal because they didn't like the medicals on his back. I'm not a doctor, Blake. I don't think you're a doctor, or at least if you are not of medicine, we don't know the truth there, right? Could that be, well, we were worried? Could that be, well, we tried and we want people to think we tried? The Yankees infamously got burned a year or two ago when they got Frankie Montas, and then he barely pitched for them at all. So I understand their caution there. But if it's true that there's something, you know, up with Flaherty's back, it didn't seem to bother the Dodgers, and the Tigers said he was still going to start for them today. So it's hard to point to that and say, well, he's being ineffective. He's pitched great the last couple times out. And when you look at the two deals for Kikuchi and for Flaherty, what it says to me is it's more that the Astros were like, this is the guy we are getting, and we don't care what it costs. And I think we got to stop thinking about the Astros the way we thought of the 15 to 22 Astros, or whatever time frame you want to put on it. Lots of good, notably some bad there as well, but they have changed the front office. There's very different decision-making. We know Jeff Bagwell's got a big voice there. And so it's hard to find anyone who looked at that return for the Blue Jays and thought the Astros came out ahead, right? Because as much as I imagine Blue Jays fans don't want to credit Ross Atkins with anything, that's an amazing deal for him, like A+.
Yeah, Jeff Bagwell by name, Bag not so well by reputation, coming out of this this deadline, to use a little Austin Powers joke there for you that like eight people get. Okay, so in terms of the Jays got a lot back over the course of all these moves, 13 prospects and Ryan Yarbrough. You know, not going to ask you for your take on guys in like low A or anything like that. But when you look at a farm system that was that weak, being able to add that level of volume, including a couple guys in Loperfido, Blas, Class A, and Wagner, who could potentially be on the major league roster in the near term. What do you like about that, or where are your question marks when it comes to the Jays operating this with an eye toward competing again in 2025?
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely thrilled that the Jays of all teams went out and got a famous son of a famous former player. Like, that fits the ethos just so well.
Billy Wagner,
listen,
joined the show.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, they're in a tough spot, right? You can't just take this roster and run it into next year and think it's going to be better. Like, that's 100% not going to work. At the same time, you couldn't trade Bichette right now. Injured, not having a good year. That's not a good time to trade him. Vlad's been hitting so well recently that it's like you have to sign him. You can't trade him right now. And if you're going to have those two guys next year, you're not going to blow up the season. You got to find a way to compete. So while I think it's fair to be concerned about, you know, let's say Bassett and Gausman next year, if you traded them away, now you don't have a rotation at all, which is a long way of getting to the point. I like that they didn't just get low-level 18-year-olds that you won't see for 4 or 5 years, right? Obviously, you're going to have some of those guys, like you have always got to replenish the farm system, and that's fine. But you're going to see Blas probably at some point this year, right? Loperfido, I think, already got added to the roster. It was so wild yesterday. I'm not 100% sure if that's true, but you'll see him, right? Wagner, I imagine we'll see sometime before the end of the season, if not early next year. So you have guys that you don't have to dream on for 2035 or whatever, right? You have guys who may potentially be part of the next good Blue Jays team, which potentially could be not that far away, with a huge caveat there. You have to go out and spend a ton of money this offseason, right? Like, you will not have enough internally to say the 2025 Jays are a playoff team based on the trades they made. You need another starter. You probably need three new members of the starting lineup, right? Like, you've got maybe three or four guys right now I can confidently say, yes, I know they're going to be on the opening day lineup next year. And you can build some pieces and parts out of, you know, Davis Schneider and Spencer Horowitz and those kind of guys. But I like that they have added some guys who can help soon and not later. And to turn a rental pitcher, and obviously, you know, Kevin Kiermaier wasn't going to be here next year, into guys like that, that's great.
So when you look ahead to what this free agent market looks like, and this is, I mean, this is going to be our main conversation on the show in August and September, probably, because the games aren't going to matter a ton here. Is this an okay time to be shopping for multiple impact bats if you have, you know, say 50, 60 million to spend?
Well, it's never a good time because you're never the only team, right? Like, I can guarantee you the Dodgers will spend and the Yankees will need somebody and the Mets might go spend and on and on and on and on. So there's never enough talent to go around. And I think that's become increasingly true as the years go by in free agency, as teams have become a little more aggressive about signing their younger guys to these early career extensions that buy out several years of free agency. Like every year, it's pretty fun to go look at who might have been a free agent this year if they hadn't signed. I believe, can't remember if it was last year or the year before, would have been Ronald Acuna Jr.'s year, right? And he obviously wasn't there because he had signed that deal. So are there some impact bats out there? Yes, everybody will point to Juan Soto. Do I really think that the Jays are going to be the team that comes away with him? Probably not. And I know that will be disappointing to hear, but I think it's just the reality of the situation. I can't say I've got the full list in front of me, but you know, does Alex Bregman excite you? Hard to say. Like, does Pete Alonso excite you? Probably not on a team with Vlad Jr., but maybe. So I think they're going to have to get creative. It's going to have to be signings. It's going to have to be trades, but it can't just be nothing. It can't be the team they have right now.
Yeah, it certainly can. And that's where, you know, again, when we talk about the trade deadline here, it's that threefold. You weren't supposed to be here. It's a failure that you were here. Yeah, you executed the deadline pretty well, given that you had to be sellers. And now you better really find a way to make sure 2025 is competitive. Small procedural note here, just to interrupt our conversation, Mike, for those listening and looking ahead to a 12:35 start today. Paolo Espino's been recalled and activated. He's going to start that game instead of a TBD. Jose Quas option down. And Jackson Holliday's officially been re-added to the Baltimore Orioles for this one. No word yet if he's going to start, but he's back on that roster. That is not relevant to our chat, Mike, but I want to get that in there because technically we're a pregame show today.
Oh, no. Jackson Holliday getting called up is absolutely relevant to every baseball chat. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, what is your expectation? So this is not the pivot I intended, but the Orioles were super aggressive yesterday, and they actually put, you know, I shouldn't say it's the first time they put a prospect on the table. Ortiz and DL Hall for 1 year of Corbin Burns was an un-Orioles-like move. But putting Connor Norby, who, you know, arguably the best prospect that moved yesterday, certainly a top three or four prospect that moved yesterday, putting him on the table and making a series of deals. Yeah, they have Jackson Holliday to backfill. That's really nice. Kobe Mayo's around somewhere if they need to backfill further than that. What did you make of the Orioles' aggression level yesterday?
Yeah, I think you said earlier, 89 prospects got moved or some thereabouts. And I also saw J.J. Cooper from Baseball America say zero top 100 prospects got moved.
Four guys in the 100 to 150 range, they said.
Right. Big day for quantity and maybe not a great day for quality. I don't want to undersell these guys, but obviously we're not talking about the top of the top. Jackson Holliday didn't get traded, right? I think, you know, what they did was interesting because everybody on the planet that figured they were going to trade blocked hitting prospects for pitching. And that's exactly what they did. It just wasn't the guy you expected. Now, give them a little bit of credit. They did trade for Zach Eflin like 2 days before, right? So they got their number three starter. This was not a guy they come in and expect to start a playoff game. And like on the surface, nobody liked this because Rodgers hasn't been good since, you know, 2021 and he's been injured. His velocity is down like 2.5 ticks. And yet I'm probably giving the Orioles front office too much of the benefit of the doubt, but I feel like we should trust them at this point. Like, they're not fools. They clearly see something about him that they like. Maybe it's, well, we're going to make him into a reliever and his velo will tick up. Maybe it's we really like his changeup and we're going to make him throw it 70% of the time. I don't know what the one weird trick will be, but it's clear they see something there that interests them. And when you look at the guys going back, yes, they're good prospects, but A, totally blocked. Like, they were never going to have homes in Baltimore. Just was not going to happen. There's questions about whether Norby can play second base. There's questions about whether Sowers can, you know, get to his power. I did not mean to make that rhyme, but that's pretty fun. And so I don't mind them trading those guys away. It just, I was surprised it wasn't. Those two guys were not going to be enough for Tarik Skubal, right? Those guys were not going to be enough for Garrett Crochet. But I thought there'd be a little more wow factor in what they got back. And, you know, it wasn't for me.
Yeah, it's interesting to take the deadline in as a whole now, because when the Yusei Kikuchi trade happened, I saw a lot of people, you know, suggests, oh, well, if that's the price for a rental starting pitcher, you know, teams should be more aggressive selling. Like, the Jays should put Chris Bassett on the market and things like that. And look, the Rays obviously believed that 3.5 games out of a playoff spot with only a $58 million payroll. They're still like, no, we're too expensive. Sell. Let's get some. And then, of course, Chris Morel homers last night because they're the Rays. And this is what they tend to do. But where do you land on this idea that it was a strong seller's market? Because, again, the volume was there. Only four guys who are even fringe top 100 moved, but a lot of prospects moved. And certainly for relievers, it seemed like there were a handful of teams that sold relievers that got pretty good deals there. Was it a seller's market? Was it more of a seller's market if you're willing to take back depth? Or is this just kind of like, we're in the three wildcard area? Like, this is what it's going to look like a little bit now.
Yeah, I don't think people have fully internalized how big of a difference it is to have this expanded postseason, right? And remember, there was originally an idea to expand it even further. I can't even imagine what that would have looked like.
No, thank you.
But, you know, yeah, what you have this year is you've got, I don't know, five or six, like, clearly dreadful selling teams. And the White Sox were a bit of an aberration in that they actually had some pretty good players to sell. I guess the A's also, even though they didn't. And when you don't have that many teams selling, and when you've got a lot of teams interested in buying, I don't mind whether you call it a seller's market or not. It just, the way it kind of sounded yesterday was people were surprised that this is like a one-off, and it feels like this might be the new normal, right? This is how it's going to be, especially when you see what happened in the World Series last year. You have wild card teams getting there, you know, Arizona getting all the way to the World Series, pretty unexpected. And I think you're going to have a lot of teams in the mushy middle saying, well, we're not ready to sell. In the past, maybe we were 8 games out of the wild card, we'd be ready to sell. Now it's, well, we think we're in. We're going to stay in, even though it might not work for us. The Rays, as always, are an aberration, but that's been true pretty much every year the team has existed, so you can set them aside. And then what was wild, too, is some of the really bottom feeder team didn't sell as much as I thought, right? Like, the Rockies not selling is not a surprise. That has always been their thing, even though I think it's wrong. You can't be surprised by that. The Angels not selling more, that was a surprise. The A's not selling more, not even Mason Miller, right, but Brent Rooker, that was a bit of a surprise. And I think that also took some of the potential trade options off the table for teams that thought maybe those guys would be out there.
Yeah, I mean, the Rocky side, I'm absolutely ready for Nick Mears to be unbelievable now, because, you know, these guys, the Rockies are a team that I would want to trade with because they're the bad player development team, right? Like, they're the team that spends nothing on, like, it's them and the White Sox at the very bottom of the, how many analysts do we have? What is our player development reputation? Like, I want to take their guys and see if you can do more with it. So it'll be funny when Nick Mears or Jalen Beeks are really good. But yeah, the Angel side of it, like, I'm shocked Luis Renjifo is still a Los Angeles Angel today. Like, I know there were a couple different guys, and these guys aren't expiring contracts, so you can see it a little bit, but Renjifo especially, like, given how many teams needed infield help, I'm pretty surprised he's still an Angel.
You know, the other thing too is there's a bit of a moral hazard in the front office there, where their general manager is, I believe, on an expiring contract, right? And is not guaranteed to return next year. So you kind of thought maybe he'd be motivated to go and make these big moves, right? Prove himself, show what he's got. And that just didn't happen. And obviously, we'll never know the inner workings. We don't know if there just weren't good trades offered. Maybe he had great trades and ownership said no. Like, we don't know all the details, so we can't pretend that we will. But there's been a lot of, you know, lousy days in the recent history of the Angels. And last night, not only did they not make any interesting trades, Mike Trout may not come back this year. I believe Rendon got hurt again. It's just bad vibes, you know? And you kind of thought maybe getting back some high-level prospect capital would help turn that around, and it didn't really happen.
It didn't. And there's one other update here, by the way, from the Jays. Joey Loperfido debuting, playing left, and hitting second today. Slotting right into the, ooh, hey, hit your best hitter second. There you go. Joey Loperfido, big spot there. And the other note there.
Won the trade.
Yeah, Alejandro Kirk not playing today. He took that pitch off the arm yesterday. So Brian Servin will catch today. No IL move or anything like that. We'll go through the lineups a little bit more a little later in the show. Mike, wanted to ask you about two more Jays trade things, but I want the other team side of this. So the first is Trevor Richards. He goes to the Minnesota Twins. We mentioned J.J. Cooper's breakdown of the 89 prospects that got moved on deadline day. Jay Harry, who came back for Trevor Richards, ranks 89th. This is like and Trevor Richards makes like not a lot of money. This is a nothing burger of a move. But Trevor Richards still, despite the ERA that climbed up toward 5 here by the end of his Jays tenure, some interesting stuff. And the Twins are a team that is smart about finding interesting stuff in, you know, these fringy guys, right?
Yeah, if I can reuse my own Twitter jokes, trading Richards for Harry would have been the coolest rock trade of 1975. But, you know, I've always liked Richards. I feel like the fan base hasn't always, right? Because the results haven't always been there. And, you know, with the changeup, he's sort of a one-trick pony, but, like, the trick is really, really good. I posted this stat yesterday that showed he was the second best in baseball at getting hitters to take these non-competitive swings, basically the swings we throw out when we're looking at bat tracking metrics because they're checked swings or they're, you know, awkward hacks or they just don't really tell you anything about anything. And he's inducing the second most of those, which Trevor Rogers, by the way, is at the opposite end. Not great for Orioles fans. And I think Twins fans are pretty disappointed in their deadline because I still believe they're a better team than the Guardians, right? I think I don't trust the Guardians. I think the Twins are sort of like steaming back up the Central. And I think if they had just made one more move for a top quality reliever, they could have been there because they weren't going to get a top starting pitcher. The lineup's pretty good when healthy, which is always the issue, but Correa's coming back and Lewis is coming back. And I don't think Richards is the reliever everybody was hoping for. And again, I like him. I think he's a quality reliever, but if he's like your biggest takeaway from the trade deadline, I don't think there's going to be a lot of satisfied fans in Minnesota over that.
No, that's all they did. The Guardians got Lane Thomas and Alex Cobb, so it's not like they went gangbuster shopping, but yeah, that is your primary. When you're in a playoff spot right now, like I don't... It was a little surprising to see them so quiet. The other Jays fit I wanted to ask you about, Kevin Kiermaier is going to end his major league career patrolling center field for a Los Angeles Dodgers team that has had really poor center field defense. And I know that Kiermaier has played his entire career in Tampa Bay and then a year and a half in Toronto. Feels Dodgers-y to me, right?
Do you think there's anybody who moved at the entire trade deadline who is happier than Kevin Kiermaier? And I don't say that in a negative get me out of Toronto way. I say that 100% in a I don't have to play on turf anymore every day way. That sounds great. I think I love that he's going somewhere with a chance to get to the playoffs, right? This guy's had a really good career. Like, we're not talking Hall of Famer or anything, right? But like a really good, solid career. One of the best defensive outfielders in generations. I just don't know about the fit with the Dodgers, honestly. Like, James Outman is a pretty good outfielder, and he doesn't hit, but Kiermaier doesn't hit either. So I guess, you know, you can move him around. He doesn't have to play center. He's going to make some really nice plays. I was surprised it was the Dodgers. Like, I thought there would have been other teams that would have found more use for him because I just don't know how much he's actually going to play. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's not if the Dodgers make the playoffs, it's when the Dodgers make the playoffs. I hope he ends his career in the same way he started it, in a playoff game. I think that would be cool.
Last one, was staying with the Dodgers here. They also added Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman. Ahmed Rosario in a smaller move. Tommy Edman in that weird three-teamer where the Cardinals seem to make out tremendous in that trade. But the Dodgers also add Jack Flaherty. The Braves and the Phillies did stuff, but not as aggressively as the Dodgers. If we're restacking the NL right now, is it pretty clearly Dodgers one for you?
No. I still think I put the Phillies okay. One. And I know the Phillies have not played well lately. I totally get that. The Phillies didn't make a ton of moves at the deadline because the Phillies were already basically the best roster in baseball. They made some moves around the periphery of their bullpen. I know they got Austin Hayes. But the Phillies have a really, really strong team, assuming that what's happened over the last couple weeks is just a blip, which I think it will be. I really like what the Dodgers did because, you know, they were aggressive to go out, not only to raise the ceiling with Flaherty, but to raise the floor with some of these guys. Old friend Kevin Biggio has not been great out there. Nick Ahmed is their shortstop right now, which tells you a lot about how like deep the depths have been. And, you know, Mookie Betts should hopefully come back soon. Freddie Freeman, for those that don't know, has been away from the team for a couple of days because his young child has been hospitalized, which is a scary situation, but they hope he comes back soon. If you go back to last week, I think like right after the All-Star break, they had a run of four starts in a row. And I'm going to try to remember all these where they started. Brent Honeywell, Justin Robleski, Anthony Bonda, and I can't even remember the other
River
guy.
But Ryan?
It was like, no,
worse than
River Ryan.
Okay.
It was somebody else, some other, we picked you up off the scrap heap like that day. The point is, Clayton Kershaw's just coming back, right? We don't know if Yamamoto's coming back. Miller and Buehler are both healthy, but neither one of them is performing as they try to work their way back. And Glasnow and Stone are both going to blow past any previous innings limits, right? Like, they desperately, desperately needed a starter. And they got, in my opinion, the best one moved for, I would say, a reasonable return. Like, there are a lot of people who follow prospects a lot closer than I do who really, really like the young catcher that they sent back to Detroit. I don't know him that well. It didn't seem like, you know, the Dodgers have Will Smith signed forever. They've got two other really good catching prospects. It's trading from a position of strength. And I also think there's potential that this isn't a rental because Flaherty is from Southern California. He posted a picture on his Instagram of him with a Dodgers hat as a kid. I'm a softie for those kind of stories. So I love it. I love it all around for the Dodgers.
John Tavares with the Toronto Maple Leafs bed sheets. You know, Mike Pietriello, thanks so much for taking the time out today, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Blake. Take care.
Mike Pietriello of MLB.com and of Blue Jays Central fairly often. We've got a lineup for today. I mentioned Joey Loperfido is going to make his Jays debut, play in left field, hit second. Paolo Espino activated to start today with Jose Kwas being optioned down. We'll continue to break that down. We got Chris LaRue on the other side. Ryan Dempster will join us. All that's in the second hour as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. In addition to 8 trades with 14 new guys coming in, the Blue Jays have a game to play at 12:35 today. That will include Paolo Espino starting fresh up from the minors. It will also include new acquisition Joey Loperfido batting second and playing left field. It's quite the interesting lineup today with Kirk out, Ernie Clements at shortstop hitting fifth. We'll go through all of that. The man who will be helping call that alongside Eric Smith is Chris LaRue on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He joins us now. Chris, how we doing, man?
I'm good. Hold on. I just want to look and see. Oh, my hair doesn't look too bad. I just shaved my head. I woke up one morning and I was just like, screw this. And I shaved my head. And that's the first time I'm really catching a glimpse of myself on
TV. Yeah. Well, here's the thing, Chris. You're a handsome man. You're tall. You're tanned from your All-Star break. You've got some advantages here that the hair looks good.
Thanks,
but even
man.
If
Thank
it
you.
Didn't, you're
Thank
working you. With some advantages here that not all of us have, you know?
I appreciate that, man. Thank you so much.
Okay. So, look, there was a trade deadline. There was also a doubleheader this week. How you feeling, man?
You know what? I said this last night on the broadcast. You have to give Ross Atkins credit. And I know that Mark Shapiro had his hand in this and probably other people as well. But Ross Atkins did a pretty good job. He got rid of a lot of guys that were probably not coming back. Expiring contracts. And he got some decent return. I know that a lot of these guys are relatively unknown, including Joey Loperfido. We did see him earlier this season, but he's a relative unknown when you think about returns. But they're guys that could be something in the future. And I know that's not the sexy thing to say when you're a fan listening to that, but I really like what Ross Atkins did. Does that save his job? I have no idea, but he did a really good job yesterday.
Yeah, there was an interesting note in Shai's write-up of the deadline, and we'll talk to Mark Shapiro next Wednesday. Mm. He's doing a media availability, but Shai had said, and this is quoting from Shai's piece, behind the scenes murmurs earlier this month suggested a change was imminent. More recently, that's shifted to him continuing on, but only Shapiro really knows. So we'll find out a little bit more on Wednesday. To your point, you know, who knows? We can say it's a good deadline, but the reason you were sellers is because there were a lot of failures to get us to this point. So good point about the prospect guys who could turn into anything. And then I guess the other thing, if you're a fan, what you're hoping on is this sets the deck a little bit better for them to go out and spend or make trades for next year.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most important things to me. This offseason is incredibly important because you kind of release some of that money, you get under that tax threshold, and then you can figure out what free agents you want to bring in, who you want to sign. And let's be honest, the Jays want to win next year. They want to win with Bo. They want to win with Vlad. Bo will probably be better next year. I don't think there's a possibility of him being worse. So let's say Bo comes back to at least a semblance of what he has been in the past. That's a big boost to this lineup. Bo's hitting .290, let's say 15 home runs, playing okay defense. That is a big boost without signing any free agents. So I think that if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan, I think that you're in a good spot. The rotation is okay. Obviously, I think either Ross or Mark or whoever is in that GM spot in the offseason is going to put together a pretty decent bullpen. I think that's the mark of a good GM, putting together a good bullpen. If you can put together a good bullpen, you have a skill set that other GMs don't have.
Yeah, and it's the hardest thing to put together because most teams, even the higher spending teams, don't believe in spending a ton of money on
it.
Because the injury rate and guys falling off is just so high. And then also, if you're the Jays, you got like 6-7 spots. Yeah. like I'm sure the joke has been made to you that like you we're not far off from you and John Axford getting the call in this bullpen. look, I'm going to turn that into a semi-serious question. Okay. There's going to be a lot of relief pitcher churn this next little bit. Mm-hmm. We've already seen this week, you know, Yerry Rodriguez recalled, play, option back down, recalled. Jose Quas just called up. He got option down today. There's going to be a lot of that. That was kind of your whole career, mm-hmm. was doing that up and down. How difficult is that if you're a pitcher?
I think that if you are a Jose Quas, first of all, or a Yerry Rodriguez, or a couple of guys like that who have kind of been there, done that. They've been the 4A guy for the majority of their career. I was always a 4A guy. I had one really good year in the big leagues. And other than that, I was always the 4A guy trying to fight for my dinner and kind of always looking over my shoulder, which really sucked. But it's in answer to your question, it's tough to do that. It's tough to be the guy that every single outing matters. If the Blue Jays and Ross Atkins and John Schneider said, hey, Jose Quas, you're here the rest of the season. Don't worry about walking three guys and giving up a couple of runs. You're here. You're the guy. You'll be in a ball game, up 5, down 5, whatever. You'll be in that game. I guarantee that by the end of September, his numbers would be okay, right? It's the fact that when you have that short leash, that tight leash, and you're always looking over your shoulder, you're always wondering, if I walk this guy, if I give up a base hit, if I give up this inherited run, what's going to happen to my career? Am I going to be in Japan? Am I going to be in Mexico? Am I going to be in AA next year? All those questions, and I'm not exaggerating, all those questions are running through your mind as you're warming up for a ball game, as you're throwing, you know, before a game. Even sometimes you see the wheels spinning when you're in a ball game throwing to a major league hitter. I don't envy those positions. I was in that position for a long time in my career. I mean, you can look at my numbers. I was DFA'd and called up a million times. And but that's just what we're going to see for the rest of the season from the Blue Jays. Will Jose Quas and Yerry Rodriguez and guys like that be in the bullpen to start the season next year? I would imagine not. I hope not. Otherwise, Ross Atkins, like I said, did not do a very good job. But for the next 2 months, that's essentially what you're going to see. I don't think a bullpen guy is sexy, so it's not a big deal. It's not going to sell tickets. But at the same time, you still want to see a guy come into a ball game up by 3, up by 4, and not walk the house and give up some runs.
Yeah, and if you're the Jays, you're going to churn all these guys, and like you got a couple 40-man spots open, some guys will get DFA'd. Like you're hoping if one of these guys that you're churning turns into a bullpen, like your seventh reliever next year, that's a win, right? Like from that churn. Right. So yeah, that's good insight. I imagine it's very tough. It seems
like it's the worst, man. Now, like, I'm starting to sweat and I'm getting nervous now just thinking about it. I remember my last outing. It was my last outing in the big leagues. It was a terrible outing.
Yankees?
I was with the Yankees, yeah. So I come into the ball game. It's the 14th inning or 13th inning, I believe. It's a tie ball game. And I walked the first guy or I believe I walked the first guy. I don't know the specifics of the whole inning, but I walked the first guy. And then you could start hearing the boos of Yankee Stadium. 50,000 people or however many people that stadium holds start booing me because they know that I've thrown one inning this whole season. They know that I've always been that 4A guy. They know that I've struggled and I've been up and down for the majority of my career. And they're like, who is this dude? Who is this dude coming into a tie ball game in the 13th inning when we're supposed to win a World Series? Get this guy out of here. He just walked the first guy. Booze, booze, booze. And then I think I gave up a base hit. I gave up a broken bat base hit. I gave up another base hit. I think I ended up giving up five runs in that 13th inning. And I remember thinking to myself, as I was giving up those runs, as I was giving up the broken bat single, as I was walking a guy, I'm getting sent down tomorrow. I'm getting DFA'd. I'm getting, if not sent down, I'm getting released by this team. Luckily, I was just DFA'd, and then I went back to Scranton. But it puts things in perspective. As I'm walking off the mound, giving up those five runs, the boos are raining down on me. People are saying my name incorrectly. They're yelling at me. They're saying, go back to Scranton.
How do you pronounce Chris LaRue incorrectly?
Well, they're not French. They're from New York.
I guess, yeah. The Rocks.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of cool when you say it like that, I guess. But, you know, the boos are raining down on me. And I'm just thinking to myself, this sucks, man. I quit. Like, I can't wait to get off this field. And I remember when I got back to the hotel that night, Brian Cashman hadn't called me yet. He called me the next morning. But I remember I was packing my suitcase. I was just ready to go. I was at a hotel in Times Square, but I was packing my suitcase, kind of no tears in my eyes because I'd been through the ringer enough in my career where I realized that that's just how it is. But it kind of brings me back to my point of Jose Kwas in the bullpen is it's really hard to pitch when you have those thoughts in your mind, right? If Trevor Richards comes into a ballgame and gives up four runs, he's not going anywhere, regardless of how bad his July was, regardless of the fact that he gave up 17 runs in eight innings or whatever it was, 16 runs. He's not going anywhere. If you said, hey, Chris, you have 2 years to just chill and pitch and do your thing. And I think I got off on a tangent here, but if you have 2 years to do your thing and just not worry about where you're going and what's happening after this game. And if you're going to get DFA'd, I guarantee I would have had a 7, 8, 9, 10 year big league career, but I was always looking over my shoulder and I was always worried about what was going to be happening.
It's tough, man. It sounds borderline impossible. Like if I have one bad interview, like I'm going to get bumped to the
Fabro's waiting at the door waiting for you.
I'm going to get bumped to the 4 a.m. slot. So that's a hard component of if you make one mistake, you're probably going to get sent down. There's another part of this too, which is the Paolo Espino part today, where no matter what he does today, he's going to get sent. Like, no, he can pitch really well today. Mm-hmm. And I know you never started in the majors, but I think that year with the Yankees, you were starting in the minors and you could have been that guy, come up, spot start, soak up some innings. What's that like for a guy like that? Now, Espino's like at the tail end here. Like, he's a journeyman. But still, that idea of you're going to come up and actually, no matter how well you pitch, you're right back down to AAA later probably.
Well, I think the worst part about Paolo Espino's situation today is the Baltimore Orioles have a very good team. They have a very good lineup. And that's probably the first hurdle that he's going to have to jump over. But I think his situation is a little bit different because he has that leash. He's the starting pitcher. Just go out there, pitch 4 or 5 innings, give us, you know, 5 innings, 3 earned runs, and you're good. He knows he's going back to Buffalo or wherever he's going. Maybe he goes 6 innings, 1 run today, and another team sees that. He goes through the process of getting – I don't think he's going to get DFA'd, but does he have any options?
Yeah, he has options.
Yeah, so he has an option. So if he pitches that well today, he's definitely not getting DFA'd. So that's kind of a situation that probably won't happen, but maybe another team sees that. They want to trade for him. They think that he can help them. His numbers aren't terrible. He wasn't great this season, but his numbers overall aren't terrible. He's just a 37-year-old journeyman.
Yeah, he can spin the ball
a
lot. You'll hear that a bunch. Like in spring training this year, I think Arden Swelling wrote it up as just like all the spin rate numbers were crazy for him. But it's a guy who's 37 and has an ERA of 5 at AAA.
Not great.
You're going back down. You're here to soak up some innings.
Yeah.
Okay, so Paolo Espino is not a part of the future here. Again, no disrespect to him, but this is why he was signed in the offseason. Right. Now, the idea was probably more, hey, we've got a playoff spot locked up and we need someone to pitch game 162 like Wes Parsons last year.
Right.
But that's what he's here for. When it comes to the guys who actually have something to play for and who are going to make a case now, like if you are Loperfido, Leo Jimenez, Ernie Clement, those kind of guys, the competition starts today for bench spots next year. You think that's a fair way to frame it?
Absolutely. We were talking about this actually last night on the broadcast, and I tend to think that Spencer Horowitz probably has a spot in that starting lineup locked up. I don't know how you feel about that.
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
Between second and DH, he's going to play 120 games.
He's like 90% locked up, I think. And then you have a guy like Davis Schneider who – yes, he's a fan favorite, but I've seen him struggle a lot this season. And I think that's kind of flown under the radar with the mustache and the fan favorite and all those things that people love
and
about
and bigger
him.
Name guys struggling, right? Like right. Springer having his struggles, Bo having his struggles. Right. Why would you pick on you know, the guy hitting 7?
Right. And so like I really wanna say Davis Schneider has a spot in that lineup, but I wanna say he doesn't. And you probably agree with me.
Not locked up, certainly.
And you know who I really love is Ernie Clement. I know that I'm not the only one saying that, but Ernie Clement, he might not be a starter in the major leagues, maybe for a bad team, maybe like the Oakland A's or something like that.
The Jays, the rest, like he's in fifth today.
Yeah,
he's a starter right now.
So maybe for the Jays for the next 2 months, he's a starter. but I don't see him as a starter with a World Series caliber team. Right. He's a guy who I want on my roster, whether I'm the Yankees, whether I'm the Phillies, or whether I'm the Oakland A's, absolutely 100%. He's always having fun out there, which is important to me as a player, as a broadcaster, as a fan. I want to see guys smiling. I want to see guys like Vlad, right? But then, is there enough power? That's the only thing I think of. Does he have the average? Sure, he gets a, you know, a base hit through the left side every once in a while. He'll get a slap base hit in a big situation. Is he a good defender? Sure, all those things. But I want more power. I want a guy that could potentially hit 20, 25, even 30 home runs if he's going to be a third baseman. I just don't see that from Ernie Clement. Do I love him? Yes. Do I think he's on the roster? Yes. Do I think he's a starter? Once in a while, but certainly not. If he's your everyday guy at third base or even DHing or whatever, I think you're in some trouble.
Yeah, and I think that's entirely fair, and I think probably Ernie Clement would admit that as well, right? Like he's got a 700 OPS. Yeah. He's done an admirable job as a bench piece. But yeah, you can't go into the season with, and this is similar to, I think, probably some of the logic in the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa trade is getting the redo on that $7.5 million. It's not so much about the $7.5 million as, well, look at all these potential bench guys you have on your roster. You have enough bench guys internally. You got to go out and make a splash at whether it's third base or left field or both or whatever. Okay. So the Blue Jays doesn't really matter how much they win the rest of the way. Obviously, these guys are starting to audition for spots and stuff like that. Is there any element of, and I know you've been in the room on good teams and bad teams, now that the deadline's behind them, guys could just loosen up a little bit, like guys know where the playing time is, they know where they're going to live and things like that. Do you expect like a bit of a looser team from here?
Well, I love being on teams like this where specifically the Pirates, the Marlins, I mean, it wasn't really like that with the Yankees just because I was always fighting to even be up in the big leagues with them, but with the Pirates and the Marlins specifically, they were outside of 2000, I believe, I forget what year it was, but 2011 maybe or 2012, the Pirates were still fighting for the playoff spot. But outside of that, I was always on a seller's team. So they would sell, they would get a ton of prospects, they would come play, whether they were good or not, that's another question. But they would come play and they would get their at-bats, they would get their innings, they would get their starts, all those things. And it was fun because it was always guys that were in the same situation. All young guys that were kind of trying to fight and stay in the big leagues. It didn't really matter, and I know this that fans probably don't like to hear this, but if Spencer Horowitz goes 3-for-5 with a couple homers and the Jays lose, let's say 9-3. Do you think he really cares?
I mean, I think he'd probably rather they win, but
do you think that he's sitting at dinner and he's like, man, I really wish that we won that ball game? Absolutely not. And I know that's tough for fans to hear, but in this situation, the Blue Jays are relatively out of it. Let's say mathematically they're not, but realistically they are. If Leo Jimenez goes 3-for-3 with a couple doubles and they lose the ballgame, do you think he really cares about that loss? No, he is pumped that he went 3-for-3. He's pumped that he's getting closer and closer to solidifying that spot on the roster for next year. Every hit they get, it's another dollar in their salary arbitration, right? That's just the reality of being a young player in the big leagues, and it is really, really hard to stay in the big leagues. When I see those guys that get 10-year service time, I'm like, how in the world did they do that? It is so hard to get 3 years in the big leagues, let alone 10. So that's what I enjoy about this time of year, where everybody's kind of fighting and clawing, and you're just pumped, not for the final score. Yes, wins are awesome. Don't get me wrong. I didn't mean that when I was saying that.
No, I know.
But you're just happy for those little individual accomplishments, a homer, a grand slam, a double, a strikeout, not a complete game, that's silly, but maybe a quality start or something like that. You're just those little things that young players really love accomplishing, and they kind of get overlooked when you're trying to win every ball game, right? So that's why I always enjoyed being a part of those teams that were relatively young, relatively new, a bunch of rookies on the team, because it's all about the little individual successes, not just the team success.
Yeah, it's exciting. Those guys have a lot on the line. Obviously, we'd all rather it be, hey, you're fighting for the 90th win, but these guys
are fighting to make a major league job. 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
Cool. It's cool for them. All right, Chris, let's lighten it up before I let you go. We were talking concerts a little bit before we came on here. You have been making the concert rounds a little bit this summer. What's the favorite one you've had so far?
This summer? So my first 6 days off in June, I flew back to LA, and I went to Luke Combs at SoFi Stadium.
Nice.
So I'm a big country guy. I'm also a big, you know, everything. I basically like I'm a free agent when it comes to music taste, but I like everything. But the Luke Combs concert was awesome. There were 75,000 people at SoFi. It was great. And then on my way to LA this past time in July, I sat next to Noodles, the lead guitarist for The Offspring.
Oh, nice.
The whole flight, and we were talking for like 3-4 hours. It was actually asked him to throw out the first pitch when if they ever come back to Toronto. Yeah. He was like, dude, I've never thrown a baseball in my life. I was like, all right, that's the last time I'll ask.
Yeah. Man, you saw our Kells as well. They threw out the first pitch and joined you guys for Max joined you guys.
Well, Max played. Max used to play baseball. Yes. So it was
he has some good slow pitch stories.
Yeah.
Not the maybe not the most sportsmanlike of guys, despite how nice he is.
Yeah.
You have any others coming out? You got a couple days off here coming up. Any other concerts for the summer?
No. You were talking about the Creed Finger 11
Creed
concert.
And Finger 11
I didn't even know that was happening.
I didn't go. It was the trade deadline, obviously. A lot of people I saw on my Instagram.
Green Day is coming to the Rogers Center. I really want to go to that, but you know what? The older I get, I just turned 40. The older I get, I just don't want to deal with the crowds. I really don't want to deal with the crowds, and I think that's where it is now. Like I love watching concerts on you know, Disney or Amazon or things like that. Like I just watched the Elton John concert when he did Dodger Stadium a couple years ago. And that was incredible. Sitting on my couch, nobody was fighting with me. Nobody was yelling at me, and I was just enjoying the concert.
Beers are more affordable.
Beers are a dollar.
Yeah, there you go. We can do the crowds for money in the bank, but maybe not for Green Day. Chris LaRue, thanks so much, man. I know you got to get back upstairs to call this game.
Anytime, dude.
Chris LaRue of Sportsnet. He'll be on the call with Eric Smith, 12:35. First pitch, Show Ali will have you for Jay's pregame 12 to 12:30 there, and Blair and Bark will be with you postgame. We will continue after this break with Ryan Dempster on the other side as Jay's Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network at Sportsnet 360.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jay's Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Ryan Dempster will join us in a little bit here. Some housekeeping before then, including I wanted to read this quote again because it came up in a conversation with Chris LaRue, but I wanted to give it its own proper air here. Shai Davidi, as all of our people have, Shai Davidi, Ben Nicholson-Smith, David Singh, Arden Zwelling, a lot of great stuff over at sportsnet.ca this week. But in Shai Davidi's write-up of this, I'm going to read the entire paragraph here for full context because we've gotten asked a lot, you know, does a good trade deadline do anything to Ross Atkins's job status? My personal opinion on that is it's a data point, but it shouldn't move the needle a ton. If you're dealing with 8-9 years of information and the thing that matters most is the major league level, a good seller's deadline is nice to have, but you know, I don't think you're adjusting your priors all that much. You probably feel how you feel about the last couple of years, but this is what Shai wrote. Whether Atkins is still the manager to implement it is the team's next major call, with some clarity likely to come August 7th when President and CEO Mark Shapiro meets with the media for the first time since spring training. Behind-the-scenes murmurs earlier this month suggested a change was imminent. More recently, that's shifted to him continuing on, but only Shapiro really knows, without any interim public comments tipping his thoughts. He has room to maneuver in either direction. So paraphrasing now, Mark Shapiro is going to talk to us on Wednesday of next week. It's the first time we've heard from him officially in since spring training. Yeah, Shai saying that there were murmurs that a change was coming, and now maybe that's less so the case. We'll have to see how that plays out over the next week and over the next couple of months here. Good deadline, but still, this wasn't the position you expected to be in. Didn't expect to be sellers. And you have a lot of work to do between now and the start of the 2025 season. The other housekeeping note, I guess I should mention, by the way, they lost 6-2 yesterday. I think this is the longest I've gone into a show without talking about yesterday's game. Vlad had another good one getting on base three times. But yeah, another loss. They'll close out this series against the Orioles today. It's a 12:35 start on Sportsnet and the Sportsnet Radio Network. It is Paolo Espino against Grayson Rodriguez. Paolo Espino was just called up from the minors. Jose Quas sent down. If you missed the flurry of moves yesterday around those trades, Luis De Los Santos is up from AAA. He's been in the system forever. It's cool to see him getting a shot here. I don't imagine he plays a ton for this team, given that, you know, they have other guys that they need to get a longer look at. But a 26-year-old who's been in the organization since he was 18, always cool to see a guy like that get the nod to the majors. Utility piece, not a ton of bat. He was hitting pretty well in AAA this year in a part-time-ish role. He'd also dealt with some injury stuff. There's maybe 10 home run power and 10 stolen base potential in there if he played every day, but he's not going to be an everyday guy. But still cool to see him get the call nonetheless. Yiri Rodriguez and Yariel Rodriguez were also activated yesterday. Yariel Rodriguez, of course, like some of the others over the last week, allowed to be activated because even though he had just been optioned, they made a trade and cleared a spot on the 26-man. And then Joey Loperfido has been activated as well. He technically was available off the bench yesterday. He is going to start today and hit second. We'll go through the lineups with you in just a minute. And then the other note, Alejandro Kirk was removed from yesterday's game after getting hit on the left elbow with a pitch from Corbin Burnes. The team called that an elbow contusion. He is not in the lineup today, but no IL move or anything like that. The big news for this game on the other side is that number one prospect in all of baseball, arguably, depending on where you look, but generally considered among the very best prospects in baseball, if not number one, Jackson Holliday is back for the Baltimore Orioles. He is going to play second base today. Let's go through those lineups while we wait for Ryan Dempster here. On the Blue Jays side, George Springer leads off. I mentioned Joey Loperfido's active. He will hit second and play left field. Vlad hitting third and getting a DH day. Spencer Horwitz plays first base then. Ernie Clement hits fifth and plays short. Dalton Varsho in center. He will be in center every day now, probably because Kevin Kiermaier is a Los Angeles Dodger. Maybe you see some Stuart Burrow in there, maybe even Joey Loperfido, but that's Varsho's spot, which should mean, by the way, for the Gold Glove conversation, he should pass left field in terms of innings playing in center field. So how Gold Glove works is you're only eligible at the position you played the most innings. So he will shift from a left fielder to a center fielder for Gold Glove discussions by the end of the season here. David Schneider hits seventh, plays second base. Addison Barger gets the start at third, and Brian Servin in at catcher since Alejandro Kirk took that pitch off the arm yesterday. On the Baltimore side, Colton Cowser leads off. Had about enough of Colton Cowser over the last couple days here, although the crowd mooing for Cowser is very, very amusing to me. Anthony Santander hits second. Gunnar Henderson, Ryan O'Hearn, Blue Jays killer Ryan Mountcastle, who just missed another home run off the Blue Jays yesterday because of that Baltimore Orioles weird left center field corner. Cedric Mullins plays center for them and hits sixth. Jordan Westberg, Jackson Holliday, back from the minors, top prospect in baseball, hitting eighth and playing second. And then James McCann will hit ninth and catch. Still very unclear on how James McCann's walking around and functioning after taking that pitch off the nose the other day from Yariel Rodriguez. Stayed in that game the first leg of the doubleheader despite the nose puffing up and having to be stuffed. And you know, we got a look at him in the dugout yesterday. He's dealing with some black eyes there. That's tough, man. That is a tough dude to gut that out for the rest of that game. And that's a tough dude to be back in there again today. We also, around the minor leagues, we'll see some of the new Blue Jays start to find their homes there. If you're looking for where to find those guys, Jake Bloss, the main note yesterday from Ross Atkins, other than, you know, the bigger picture stuff, apologizing to the fans, calling the season a disappointment and a failure to be selling here. And he did straight up say, I apologize to the fans. Jake Bloss will eventually go to AAA, probably going to see him in the majors at some point this year. But at first, he's joined the complex in Florida. They just want to intake him and get a sense of where he's at and things like that. So no imminent game action for Jake Bloss. Joey Loprofito, obviously, with the Major League team. Jonathan Class A has already played a couple games at AAA. Will Wagner is also joining the AAA Buffalo Bisons. The AA New Hampshire Fisher Cats are getting Charles McAdoo, Yohindrick Pinango, Edinson Paulinho, and Josh Rivera. So nice influx for the Fisher Cats there. High A Vancouver is going to get Cutter Coffey, Jacob Sharp, and Jay Harry. Single A Dunedin will get Gilberto Batista. And then we don't know where RJ Schreck's going, but he was in High A and Double A earlier this year. So we'll see all of those guys pop up in the minors over the coming days. We are now going to see our next guest of Intentional Talk, of Marquee. It's Canadian baseball legend Ryan Dempster. Ryan, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, morning. How are we doing? I'm doing great, thanks.
Good, man. How was the trade deadline for you? Yeah, I mean, I know you guys were doing it's busy. It's a busy week for everyone. You surely had to sit with, like, all 30 teams made a trade. Who do I like? Who do I not like? How'd you enjoy deadline day?
Yeah, I think it was fun. I mean, nothing huge blockbuster-wise that we were probably all hoping for, but it's harder these days to do that. One, teams value a prospect more than they do a current Cy Young Award candidate or a MVP candidate. So they want to make sure they keep controllability. It's all about keeping that payrolls intact. That being said, also, you see what happens year after year. I mean, if we look at the last 15 years of playoff teams and teams that have gone to the World Series and won World Series, look at how many of them just got hot in the last 2 months of the season. So, you know, if you're a team that's not totally out of it, you kind of hold hope and maybe that, you know, if you get a little bit hot with the right glove that you can get there. So, yeah, it was good. There were some good moves, a lot of bullpen help moving around. Some good additions by some teams. Some teams got some good prospects back in return.
Yeah, a lot. 89 prospects, I think, got traded yesterday. So, lots of depth, but none of those top 100 guys. Jackson Holliday's in the lineup today for the Orioles. He didn't get dealt. The team certainly with the top prospects clutching on there. What is this time of year like as a player? I know you've been dealt at the deadline. You've been on teams that added pieces at the deadline. What has this last couple of days been like, especially if you're one of those guys who could have been traded?
I think, it's a tough thing. Like, everybody sits there and says, oh man, you could get, like, say, let's just take, for example, Tarek Skubal, right? His name was floated around there. Dodgers interested, Orioles interested, all these teams interested. And if you're on those teams, it's exciting, the thought of getting that guy. But if you're a guy like Tarek, who's a great kid, he's come up in Detroit, he wants to be there, he wants to see it through. You got family there, and it's not easy getting traded away. I've been traded away a couple times. You kind of go through that gamut, and you're probably a little relieved you don't get traded, because part of us instinctually as players is we want to see things through to the end, till when they're better on the other side. We don't always want to jump ship and go to the team that's already proven they can win. We want to be a part of building that ourselves. And the guys that do get traded, it's not always easy, but there's some excitement. And for the clubs that get those players, I know in that locker room, when you feel like you're really close, like I remember 2013 with the Red Sox, we got Jake Peavy and Matt Thornton from the White Sox. And it was like, yeah, here we go. That's what we needed. We needed a left-handed reliever and we needed another starting pitcher. And so, that becomes this exciting moment, and it energizes your team, energizes your front office, your scouts, your clubhouse guys, the people in the business ops that are trying to sell tickets, all that stuff. And then most importantly, your fan base. So, it's an interesting time. It's a tough one as a player you go through. And for these prospects, a lot of them probably upset right now. They just left their team that they got drafted by or signed by, and they thought they were going to come up with. But remember that when that happens, it's a great opportunity. It means that somebody really wants you, and you get an opportunity for a team to look at you in a new light.
Yeah, and maybe, maybe you're stuck at AAA. Now you get a shot at the majors. Maybe you're stuck at AA. You get the bump to AAA. You mentioned there, that invigoration in the room of, hey, we added guys. This is exciting. If you are one of those guys that a team added, and I know you were the addition a couple times, is there an extra level of pressure a guy puts on himself? Are you just excited to be going? Generally, you're going from a bad team to a good team, so that part of it's probably pretty exciting. But what's that level of, pressure on yourself like that a guy might feel?
Yeah, I think, it's one of two things. Like, I think my first time I got traded, I've been traded three times. I got traded as one of the prospects in the minor leagues. And then at the big league level, I put a little too much pressure on myself when I got traded to Cincinnati from Florida. Like, I needed to be so good, you know, when the reality was I just needed to be myself and go out there and pitch well. And then I learned from that my second time, you know, getting traded to Texas, and you just kind of get settled in, and you find your way in the locker room, and guys, that's the one part is like 99.9% of every locker room you go into, when you're getting traded to a contender, that locker room's great. That's why they're contenders. You're not getting traded to a, you know, an uncomfortable situation. You're usually getting traded out of that into a really good situation. So the guys are also welcoming. They're excited to have you there. You know, they're inviting you to dinner or whatever to hang out afterwards. And so it becomes really easy to get comfortable with the guys. And then for yourself, just do what you're doing. You don't try to do more than that. And I learned that my first time I tried to do so much. So yeah, it's definitely a mix of emotions, like being traded and being traded away from somewhere where you planted roots and been for a long time, or maybe somebody's just finding their groove somewhere and all of a sudden they end up somewhere else. It's not always the easiest thing, but you rely on those guys in that locker room who are going to welcome you with open arms.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we heard, you know, some insightful stuff from Justin Turner the other day, for example, who, you know, came here on a one-year deal. The expectation was to compete for a World Series. You're kind of dealing with, hey, that didn't work out, but now I got a new chance. I did want to ask you about Turner. I know you guys talked about it on Intentional Talk a little bit the other day, but the Mariners add Randy Rosarena. They add Jimmy Garcia from the Blue Jays. Do you like the Justin Turner add for them as well? A guy who's going to, you know, probably start against lefties and then give them even more of that kind of veteran thing that you're talking about in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I do. You know, like they got JP Crawford's out and Julio Rodriguez are out right now. And I think that, you know, when you can add bats like those guys, now those guys come back. And, you know, I think it lends to a better, deeper lineup. Justin Turner's a guy who's going to give you a great at bat with runners in scoring position. He's going to put the ball in play. The Seattle Mariners struggle with swing and miss inside the zone. When you add him in there, Randy Rosarena, these are guys who played on the biggest stages, World Series, playoff games, all these kind of things. It just brings good experience. And what happens is like, I talked to Anthony Rizzo about this when they got Juan Soto. He's like, you know, yes, Juan Soto is such a great hitter, you guys, but he changed our complete and, you know, our lineup and the way that guys hit, because we get so caught up in home run and slug that we forget that it's really important to sometimes battle and go out there and put together that solid at bat that maybe you don't get an out on, but you grind out 7 or 8 pitches off of that pitcher for the next guy, right? That's the part about being a team. Sometimes we get so individualized. It's an individual sport. I get that. But the best offenses I've been around on teams and I watch them, they just grind the other pitcher. And it might not necessarily result in a hit for you, but it trickles down to the next guy because now that guy's a little bit more tired. And that's what Justin Turner does. You know, the experience of seeing pitchers around the league, knowing guys, I think that'll help that lineup a lot. I think it made them better offensively, adding both of those pieces. I think obviously we know what they can do from a pitching standpoint. So those are both really good trades, and I think they're going to help the Mariners in a big way, especially when they get those other two guys back. Their lineup's going to look dramatically different.
Yeah, and you know, a little element of rooting for them here, you know, seeing a handful of ex-Blue Jays there, although there's ex-Blue Jays with the Astros now too, and Yusei Kikuchi. Another vet the Blue Jays traded. The Dodgers were busy yesterday. They add Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman to shore up the infield. They add Jack Flaherty, which is obviously the headline item at the buzzer there. If you're a Dodgers pitcher, though, how excited are you that Kevin Kiermaier is there patrolling center field, coming off the bench for you and playing a couple days a week?
Absolutely, man. Anytime you can add Gold Glove anywhere, in, you know, in the infield, in the outfield, that always makes you feel better. And, you know, when you're a World Series caliber team, you need guys like this, guys that you can put in, because let's face it, when you start whittling away and you start getting down to the last four teams in the league, it's the little things that are going to win the games for you. It's not the big things. Everybody's capable of hitting a 3-run home run or having a pitcher go out there and punch out 10, but who can come up with the big defensive play? Who's the speed guy on your bench that can steal a base when you need it, you know? Those kind of things really matter. And Kevin Kiermaier, absolute stud in the outfield, you know, and for the Dodgers, this is exactly what they need. When you can sit there and put him in, you know, late in games to be able to secure those victories for you and come up with those big plays, he can get out there and play against right-handed pitching and all these kind of different things. So yeah, a good pickup. That's what the Dodgers do. And they didn't need superstars. They didn't even need an ace in their rotation. They got those guys. they needed these little pieces that'll help them, depth pieces. And that's what good teams do down the stretch.
If we shape up the NL today and how it looks after the deadline, Dodgers the team to beat, or the Phillies still right there, even though they had a quieter day?
For me personally, I think the Phillies are. I think they're, just when you look at them top to bottom. Now, that being said, Mookie Betts will come back for the Dodgers. Sometimes I feel like the Dodgers are very good at using the system put in place to be able to rest players, and play for the long game, because who cares if you win your division? It's awesome. It's great. But like the end goal, especially for them, given their, history in the last 10 years of what they put together, they want to win a World Series. So they're like, riding that racehorse around the third turn, and they're just kind of pacing themselves. But for me, the Phillies, when I look at, you have four starting pitchers, and we're not even going to get into Phillips because he's a young kid who's just obviously come off a shutout. But you look at their four top starters, and those are number ones and twos on every team in the league. And then you have a good bullpen, a really good bullpen with a nasty guy, Alvarado, at the back of it. And then they have maybe the most complete offense in baseball. They've had some guys that struggled lately, like Alec Baum has struggled since the All-Star break. Brandon Marsh struggled until he just recently, broke out of it with a home run. But all in all, I think that they are playing that same game the Dodgers are. They're just kind of sitting here loping around third base, the third turn now, getting ready to come down the stretch. And they're looking forward to breaking out. And they're hungry after what happened last year and what they have in that locker room. They're tight. They're a good, tight-knit group led by Rob Thompson. And I think that they're the best team in the National League.
Okay. On the American League side, the Orioles and Yankees both obviously felt that they weren't good enough yet. They're battling for the AL East. They're battling with the Guardians for the best record in the American League. The Orioles go out and they add Zach Eflin, Gregory Soto, Austin Slater, Eloy Jimenez, Trevor Rogers, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Christian Pache, big load there. And then the Yankees are a little quieter. They add some bullpen help. It's like, yeah, Jazz Chisholm's going to hit four home runs in his first three games as a Yankee, make a diving stab at a position he's never even played before. You like the Jazz Chisholm fit with the Yankees?
I think it potentially could be something special this year. I just think, that the energy of going from Miami, where you're getting about 3,500 fans a night, to Yankee Stadium, and he hasn't even had a chance to, really take that in yet, is pretty special. And, there's still holes in the game, but, the potential there to do some different things, dynamic things, right? Steal bases, make a play defensively, go play center field if need be. And then obviously what he's done with Aaron Judge's bat lately, he's been pretty fun to watch. But I personally, like when you talk about those two teams, I think they're both tremendous teams and I think they're great. I think one team that's just flying under the radar in the American League is the Cleveland Guardians. And I just think that they just are just so solid. What they are able to do from a pitching perspective, their bullpen, offensively, you look at their lineup, you're like, oh, how do these guys put up so many runs? But they do night in, night out. They got guys who can thump. They got one of the most underrated players, although maybe not anymore, in Jose Ramirez. And the American League's a little bit tighter, and there's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. Stephen Fote's done a really good job there, but fun, right? We're at this point now where we love baseball all season long and we love the marathon, but now we're getting into like the nitty gritty of it all. And it's just, this is my favorite time of the year, come August 1st, where you can just start rolling in and see where teams are going to end up winding up at the end of the season.
Yeah. I love transactions. I love talking about trades and reacting to it on the show. But yeah, if you're not the Blue Jays, there are like 22 teams who get to turn the focus now, let's win a pennant. Let's make the playoffs. It's a lot of fun. So those are the teams that did load up. When you looked at what happened or didn't happen yesterday, and I know every team technically made a trade in the last couple of days here, is there any team that you were left looking at like kind of that's it, like you have this opportunity here and you didn't fortify? Like I'd imagine, especially from a clubhouse perspective, that's got to be a weird feeling too. Like I think of the Twins, for example. They're in a playoff spot and I know there's budget stuff, and you add like a low leverage reliever in Trevor Richards and that's it for the day. Were there any teams that you were like, man, that's it?
Yeah, that was honestly a little bit of one. The Twins kind of shocked me in the fact that, there wasn't a lot there. The Brewers, I thought maybe there might be a possibility. I know they added a starter and they added, a reliever, I believe. But, like, there was just a couple teams where I think, sometimes we get so caught up in, what the future holds. And you mentioned, what is it, 80, how many prospects?
89.
83, 85, 89 prospects. Okay, let's think about that. 89 prospects were traded. Out of that 89 prospects, we'll be lucky if 8 or 9 of those prospects make it to the big leagues. You know, with when I say make it, like make it in the big leagues.
Yes.
Like there might be 5, you know. I mean, you go down trades in the past. You go down, like, you know, the Christian Yelich trade to the Marlins when you get Christian Yelich and 4 of those guys are no longer in the big leagues, you know. You go to the Chris Sale trade and you get Yoan Moncada, who's always been hurt, and Michael Kopech, who's underperformed, and then the other 2 guys we never hear. When the Cubs traded for Aroldis Chapman, you know, you got Gleyber Torres, and other than that, nobody panned out. It's a crapshoot. So sometimes I wish that there would be a team that just says, nah, like, cool, man. You can have your prospects. We can have our prospects. I want this guy. I want that guy. I don't care if I give up 5 for 1 for a Tarek Skubal or, you know, a Vladdy Jr. Like, I understand that, you know, there's a lot more moving parts to it. I love the big blockbuster where a team looks down in that locker room from the up above in the front office and goes, man, we got a good club down there that I think could win the World Series if we just add this piece or this piece and go for it. And I feel like there's a little bit less go for it nowadays, like we used to see out of the Yankees in the late 90s and 2000s, you know, like that kind of stuff. And then just the excitement factor in me, like the wow factor, I just wish we would have saw a little bit more of that. But the game's changed a little bit more and, you know, salaries are high and you got to figure out a way to fix, you know, keep it all together.
Yeah, years of control, payroll, the CBT, all that stuff. A flag flies forever, though. You get to look at that banner for the rest of the existence of the franchise, right? Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to the rest of the season.
Ryan Dempster of Intentional Talk, of Marquee. Yeah, a lot of great stuff there from Ryan. A lot of great stuff from the Intentional Talk crew all the time. So that's not it for the deadline. We're going to talk a lot about the deadline over the course of the week and weeks as well. Tomorrow we'll have Kylie McDaniel and Eric Longenhagen on to kind of take the restock of where the organization is farm system wise, front office wise, and things like that. Ben Nicholson Smith will also join us tomorrow. You know, Friday we'll have a deeper show. We'll set up that Yankees series and talk a little bit more about Jazz Chisholm and things like that. I did want to fit in a couple texts here before we sign off and hand it to Show Ali for Jay's pregame. Alex in the Junction said, Noodles from the Offspring was one of the first guitarists I looked up to learning to play guitar. These are the kind of stories. Yeah. Thanks, Alex. I'm glad you got a kick out of that LaRue's flight with Noodles from the Offspring. We'll probably do a little bit more music stuff over the last 2 months of the show. Obviously, I sprinkle that in sometime. We've done a little wrestling stuff. I think I'll probably have a little bit more freedom to do that in August and September if you know, the Jays playing as they are. You know, I don't know. My guys in Alexis on Fire have a pretty big show coming up here in Toronto in a couple weeks. Maybe they'll pop by. We'll talk. We'll blend a little music with the baseball at times as well. Marty from Caledonia says, why can't all the improvements come internally? Where does the Rays improvement come from year in, year out? Man, the Rays improvement comes from a lot of selling at the deadline. And, you know, look, they're one of the best player development organizations in all of baseball. They're the kind of standard you aspire to, at least on the position player side, from a player development side. But the answer to why can't all the improvements come internally is that, I mean, the players aren't good enough. This is a team that's going to finish the season 10, 15 games below 500. And that's with Vlad playing pretty well now. Bo's obviously going to be better. Springer's turned it around a little bit. But the players just, they're not good enough yet. And, you know, you're going to have to fortify there. And, you know, that's not to say that some of these guys can't be everyday regulars. Some of these guys can't be good bench pieces. Some of the prospects they picked up or are already in the system won't be really meaningful pieces down the line. But if you are trying to compete in 2025 and it's the last year of control you have on Vlad and Bo and Chris Bassett and, you know, your rotation's a year older and things like that, you can't bank on just, hey, we think our guys will be a little bit better, especially when the track record does not suggest that there's a ton of that. Like, yes, there have been some player development successes, but not enough that you can go into the offseason and be like, yeah, all our improvement will come internally. There just isn't enough evidence of that. It's just too important a year to rely entirely on that. You're going to have to be free agent shoppers. David in Newfoundland asks, I think part of why we won't see players with term move is because they don't want to give Atkins the opportunity necessarily. I mean, look, again, I'll refer to that Shy quote from his write-up that there were murmurs that there could be a change in the front office. That's quieted down a little bit now, but we'll see over the coming weeks. And again, Mark Shapiro is going to speak next Wednesday. I don't necessarily think it's that. I think that is the idea that they would move players with term. And I think we're specifically talking about like Vlad and Boa and the couple of starters, because they did move Isaiah Kiner-Falefa after that question came in yesterday. I think those are just like enormously, like the Vlad and Bo part of it is an enormously different organizational decision than should you cash in on a seller's market and move a guy with term. Trevor in C4th asks, don't you think the 2025 Blue Jays payroll has to be higher to be truly competitive? You need to add a lot of pieces. Yeah, I mean, it's, here's the thing. The Jays were, I think, the number 7 payroll this year before they started selling off. It was headed to be the second year in a row they've spent into the tax. The amount they're spending is not the issue. It's how they've spent that money and how they've built that team with that budget. Yeah, they will have to have a pretty high payroll next year. I'm working with 250 as my kind of rough assumption, which would be back into that first tax bracket. And then after all the extra stuff that figures for CBT, maybe even pushing up against the second. But yeah, they've got a lot of work to do, and some of that's going to have to come with spending. We've got a lot of work to do with a 12:35 game today, so I'm going to wrap this up and pass it off to Sho Ali for Blue Jays pregame. Eric Smith and Chris LaRue have the call for you. Thank you to Chris LaRue, to Ryan Dempster, to Mike Petriello, and to Jonah Bierenbaum for joining us on the show today. Thank you to Andrew Adams, Jennifer Rolnick, and Amit Mann behind the glass. We will be back with you at 10 a.m. tomorrow to break this one down, to reset where the Blue Jays look organizationally with a couple of big hitters around baseball. Have a wonderful Wednesday, everyone.